Yeah, open source in the enterprise from the early days, back when there was even the barest hint that there could be commercial involvement in open source, that the term open source was palatable to people who are in big businesses. People have been talking about open source in the enterprise. So 10 years now, what's different now that was not there 10 years ago?
Well, I mean, to my mind, what's changed is it's the adoption has, been gradually building over the course of time, and now it's reaching a tipping point where it's becoming a much more significant presence. And most organizations are at least aware that they're using it, and some are overtly pursuing an open source oriented strategy for part of their IT strategy. So it's very consistent with most what I'd call revolutions, in that the take up is relatively gradual. There's no one day where everybody wakes up and goes aha and shifts en masse, but it sort of builds and builds and eventually gets to a point where it's the deal. It's the way things are done. I mean, the same thing happened with PCs. So this is not a new kind of thing, and it's not something sui generis to open source. This is very consistent with the way innovation gets adopted by enterprises.
So in your mind, a disruptive technology such as open source is nearly inevitable.
Well, for sure. I mean, I'm a huge believer in free, and that cheap trumps expensive long term. There aren't many markets where being the expensive alternative is a positive characteristic.
These are luxury markets, and
luxury goods. Where it's I spent $5,000 for this handbag, makes it better than a $2,000 handbag. There's certain markets, but most markets are lower price entrants tend to displace higher price entrants, assuming they're on the roughly on the same functionality scale. So I do think it's inevitable in that the cost structure is very, very compelling for open source.
And by cost structure, one of the points you bring out in your report, it's not just upfront costs, but even opportunity costs of acquiring the software for doing an initial deployment or exploration.
One of the great things about open source is that it has very low barriers to trial. So you have an opportunity to really start experimenting almost immediately. And, that means that if you've got a particular kind of opportunity or a business situation that presents itself, you can get going right away. You don't have to sort of do this upfront planning and upfront justification for the licenses and so forth. And it gives you an opportunity to get going really quickly. So you can explore much more cheaply. So it gives you a chance to lower your cost of experimentation. And that's a real benefit, particularly in a time of economic change or economic turmoil or significant economic change, at a macro level, which is what's going on with, trends in our global economies,
mm-hmm.
lots and lots of change. So in that kind of environment, the ability to experiment quickly and cheaply is a positive characteristic for open source software vis-a-vis the proprietary alternatives.
There are downsides as well, though. I remember at HP in the late 90s, when no one had heard of the Linux kernel and Apache HTTPD was probably the only success, it was really, really easy to take an old decommissioned machine, stick it under a desk, and all of a sudden my department had a web server. And so the CIO might not know that we're using the Linux kernel, we're not using Apache, we're not using Debian, but there could be hundreds of these boxes performing vital functions that it is not apparent to centralized IT, for example.
Yeah. Well, that's a traditional story about open source. And I guess, really a major driver for the report being put together and a major theme is that, this stuff has come out from under the table, under the desk, or out of the, wiring closet and into kind of more consciousness. But it takes a long time for that to happen. It's a gradual trend, but that it's becoming more. There, awareness is becoming stronger, and so people start formalizing around it more. I heard a very sort of humorous anecdote about this. Someone was in talking to a CIO about open source, and the CIO said, "Well, we don't use any open source. I mean, we're just, you know, proprietary." And they said, "You mean you're not using Apache? You're not using Tomcat?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. We use Tomcat. We use Apache." "Well, where do you get Apache from?" "Well, we get it from the Apache Corporation." And, you know, it was like, okay. I mean, clearly that person had not poked very deeply into what that was. But I thought that was a pretty funny anecdote about it.
I think ASF will be happy to hear that the branding is working.
Yeah, yeah.
And they can up their support fees, too.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, do you think this, in your years of watching open source adoption in the enterprise, do you think a lot of this is top-down, bottom-up, or is it inevitably a combination of the two? I mean, if I go to Red Hat and say, let's put an ad in CIO Magazine saying the cost of acquisition for JBoss and Tomcat running on Red Hat Enterprise Linux is a fraction of that for, you know, IBM's proprietary offering or the Oracle stack or something like that, versus somebody who's been in the organization for 10 years who started like I did by putting a little web server under his desk and is now in a position of authority in the organization. Do you have a sense that adoption comes from one or the other, or is it always both?
Well, I tend to think that it's bottom-up, and I think that most innovation is. It's very hard when you're at the top of an organization and sort of consumed with keeping, you know, kind of the mainstream initiatives of the organization going and so forth. It's very hard to sort of make mind share for, well, what are the innovative things we ought to do? Let's go, you know, do that. Whereas somebody further down, you know, can take it upon themselves out of a personal interest or out of a need or something to experiment. And typically what happens is that enough of those experiments happen, awareness gradually builds and moves up the food chain till it gets high enough up where somebody goes, oh, this is really something we're doing a lot of. And then they start to connect the dots and say, well, you know, how are we handling this? Should we be doing more of it? What are the common characteristics? Then it starts to get more widely adopted. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, the PC is a really good example of that. I mean, today it's hard to think of it, but when PCs first showed up in enterprises, they were not an official IT initiative. Far from it. They were brought in by people kind of through the front door, or maybe the back door, from home. And they sort of plunked them on their desk and they said, this helps me do my job. I can run spreadsheets. I can, you know, do what-if analysis. And the initial reaction by most IT organizations was to attempt to ban them. And, you know, that's not part of our official structure and so forth. And essentially, people said, well, you know, you're gonna get rid of this PC when you clutch my cold, dead fingers, you know, from around it kind of thing, and pry my dead, cold fingers from around it. And they stuck, and then they started to grow. And, you know, eventually it became enough well-known, and there was enough business value that it started to become more of an official thing. And at that point, you started to get IT groups doing things like, well, we need a budget for them. We need to sort of define standard hardware, standard software loads, approved software lists, so forth and so on. And that's very much how it works. So it's sort of typically, from my perspective, these things always start bottom up. They bubble upwards. And at a certain point, they achieve a critical mass where they become more official policy.
In 2008, with regard to open source, where are we at that? What part of the cycle are we in?
Well, you know, it's surprising to many people and even surprising to me, but I think we're still early. Most organizations are probably aware that they're using open source, but they have not yet really connected the dots of what that implies and, you know, that they should be more regular about it. In the report, I sort of characterize three action plans for organizations to pursue when they around open source. And the one is kind of the early stage or ad hoc. And that probably makes up like, you know, 90% of open source users, enterprises, that is. You know, they're aware of it. They use it for isolated instances. It's still being adopted kind of from bottom up. They're aware of, you know, specific success stories. But they haven't yet gotten to a place where they kind of go, okay, this is going to be a regular part of the way we do business going forward. We need to plan for it and incorporate it into our standard process and so forth. Mainstream users, by contrast, are very aware of open source. They regularly consider it. They oftentimes will do things like as part of their technology initiatives, say, you've got to examine whether there's an open source alternative for us to use within this technology initiative, and identify the ones you've looked at and whether, you know, give a no-go recommendation about them. So it's kind of wired into their process that open source is something to be actively considered. And that's really only a very few percent, I'd say less than 5% of most organizations. And then at the very top, you've got kind of at the tip of the pyramid, you've got maybe 1 or 2% that are really looking on open source as being a real source and supporter or enabler of innovation. And, you know, sort of how can we build new kinds of apps where we can take advantage and leverage the economics of open source, or build a community around what we want to do to help build our business. That's a smaller percentage yet still.
Do you foresee those numbers changing over time? Would it follow a classic disruptive technology adoption curve?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, eventually that kind of, you know, we use it certain places, or it happens as a skunk works, or, you know, we weren't really paying attention and they snuck open source. That's all going to drop away. It will become kind of, oh yeah, when, you know, for every system we build, we will consider whether we have some options around open source. Absolutely. There's no question about that. It's coming, though. That I don't know that we're there yet with most organizations.
Does that require evangelism on the part of open source developers, companies that have already adopted it, maturity of the available open source applications, support channels? What are the drivers of this, besides, of course, free, which is hard to compete with?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the drivers are a couple of fold. One is, you know, actual experience within the organization. Hey, we built some things, and there's, you know, 4 of them or 5 of them. Let's look at the commonalities and see if it all makes sense. Should we do more of it? That's one. And then the second is the all-purpose, what are my peers doing? What are our peer organizations doing? Or are they doing a lot of it? Well, then we ought to be on top of it too. So it's this kind of, you know, keeping up with the Joneses sort of thing as well. To me, those are the key factors that really drive an innovative technology or a disruptive technology to be something that is, you know, becomes part of everyday processes.
You didn't even take the bait on, is it mature enough? Are the applications there, support channels there? Shall I assume that you think that for many applications they are?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, I find it ironic because I still run into people who I'll have that discussion and they'll kind of reflexively say, well, you know, the problem is there, you know, no support. And really, to my mind, that is the knee-jerk reaction of you know, a late adopter, or you know, I don't know what an appropriately
dinosaur
acerbic term is, but that's someone who, you know, is using that as a rationalization, a fig leaf for, I don't want to really do anything different than what I'm doing now, so if I just kind of trot this excuse out, that, you know, I won't have to really confront it. I mean, there's a zillion open source products, and so obviously some of them have, you know, the right kind of support capabilities, are mature enough, some of them aren't.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about that. But many, many of them do have those characteristics and capabilities. And so to reflexively refute the use of any open source by saying, well, it doesn't have that, it, to me, is, you know, is just so backward-looking. It's just, it's consigning yourself to a laggard position. And, you know, I mean, I guess depending on the industry and depending on the company, that might be a comfortable position to be in. But for many companies and many industries, that's unacceptable. And so to sort of put forward that kind of response, I think, is a real abdication of the responsibility that someone who is in charge of an organization's technology strategy, that's an abdication of that responsibility.
Those are pretty strong words, but I'm glad to hear them.
Well, I mean, you know, that's the job of, of someone in that role, is to understand what are the new trends, the new developments, and particularly what are the disruptive trends. I mean, if you know, just like you'd expect someone in marketing to know what are the new disruptive ways of reaching out to customers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and if in 1998 or in 2000, someone said, "Well, I'm not going to use that web marketing stuff because, you know, it's not really clear if, you know, whatever the rationalization would be, that would be the equivalent of, I don't know if there's support there for it."
Right.
You'd look at that and you'd say, that's somebody in charge of marketing who is missing part of their responsibility. Part of their responsibility is to find new ways to reach our customers. That person should be doing that. And if they weren't doing it, you would question their the appropriateness of them being in that role for your company.
And that's an interesting analogy as well, because nearly all of the software driving the internet is in fact open source.
Well, that's true. I mean, and really, if you look at Web 2.0 stuff, so I talked about that kind of 1 or 2% of companies who are being really innovative, and I think Web 2.0 as a concept fits into that category. They're all open source powered, and they
right.
have to be, because they're built with the assumption that you're going to have large scale in terms of your systems. You need to have a way to react quickly, you know, roll out new systems, new, be able to expand your capabilities quickly. That's all open source. I mean, they just, for them, it's not even a question. They never have that debate. They just, of course, default to using open source. Because
it's not if we'll use it, but which projects will we use?
Yeah, what are the right ones for us to use to pursue our strategy, which is based on, you know, large-scale expansions, the ability to perform, you know, react quickly, be agile, and so forth. So for them, it's not a, you know, the internet is, yeah, is just, you know, it's powered by open source. There's no question about it.
And it, in fact, powers open source in return.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, open source wouldn't exist without the internet.
Exactly.
There's no question about it. And,
exactly.
It's an enabler for it. And the fact that, you know, the internet in general and broadband penetration specifically has been spreading throughout the world has been a huge enabler of open source software.
Right.
And, you know, the creation of open source and distribution use and so forth.
No, I remember reading in your report where you broke down adoption strategies for these three categories of companies you describe.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't see in a great deal of detail was breaking these down per industry. So it's not as if airlines are adopting this, technology companies are adopting this, not adopting this. Did your studies give you a sense of penetration in specific vertical industries?
Our data mining didn't go in that direction, although that would be a very interesting direction, and maybe version 2.0 of the report will look at specific industries. And I think that's a very good suggestion and one that really should be taken up. Intuitively and, you know, anecdotally, industries that have taken up a lot are ones that were really cost-pressured. So travel is one, retail is another.
Startups.
Well, startups, absolutely. We can come back to that in a moment. And also telecom. Those have all, because they're all under extreme cost pressures. And so, you know, a lower cost alternative is very attractive for them.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of startups, I would say that, you know, entrepreneurs are really drawn to it because, you know, for them, the amount of money they spend is directly related to the amount of equity they give up.
Right.
And so the less they have to spend, the more equity they can retain. And, you know, I'm sure you've seen this whole discussion that there's a question of, sort of a complaint among venture capitalists because, say, Jesus, Web 2.0 stuff doesn't really take as much funding as these old companies did.
Right.
So it's hard for us to essentially it's hard for us to spend as much money on them as we used to be able to in the old days.
Right.
So kind of a plaintive cry about that. So open source has been great for entrepreneurs, you know, no question about that either.
Now, I bring this up because one of the highlights of the study for me was looking at job data and pulling out job trends. And one of the surprising conclusions was that perhaps 10% of jobs within certain industries have a strong focus on open source.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually, that was pretty much across mainstream Fortune 500 companies.
Right.
So in other words, big manufacturing companies and so forth and so on. We had to strip out technology companies because many of them, as much as 40 or 50% of their jobs would be open source oriented.
Right, right.
But generally across the broad spectrum, about 10% of their jobs were focused on open source skills.
Did that surprise you as much as it surprised me?
It did. I would have thought that it was going to be lower, and it sort of surprised me that it was at that level. You know, and I haven't had an opportunity yet to really pursue it with enough CIOs to really understand, you know, what that implies or what that means. You know, and it might be the case that some of those CIOs even don't know that there's that many jobs. You know, those might be getting created and posted at levels lower in their organization.
Right.
But I was surprised. And I think that people in general, because I've talked to people in the past, said, so what percent of an infrastructure do you expect is open source? And the numbers have come up, you know, 1-2%, something like that. So I think, you know, based on that perspective, hearing that 10% of the people that they're hiring for technical jobs are open source, you know, developers or admins or whatever, would be pretty surprising.
So what kind of implications are there, I mean, for me as a businessman or for me as a technologist, what should I be looking at in the next year or two related to that information?
Well, you know, first and foremost, you know, as we talked about that technology adoption, right, it comes up from the bottom, it bubbles up, and then at a certain point, higher level, you know, people start saying, well, you know, we need to really sort of, you know, make more of a plan around this, be more formal, more of a structured approach to it. Well, this data should tell people, you know, hey, it's getting to that point. I need to really come up with a more structured approach to it. I need to, you know, make sure, do I have a plan to create the right skill sets that I need? Am I recruiting in the right places for those kinds of folks? You know, and in the report I talk about things like, you know, creating the ability to work with communities.
Actually, that was one of my favorite things you mentioned altogether. As a practicing technologist, I find that businesses are almost ignorant of the fact that community-driven software development, which powers a lot of open-source projects, relies on the active participation of users, turning them into actual contributors.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, just participating in communities, I think, scares a lot of enterprises.
Exactly.
It seems just kind of squishy and, you know, kind of uncomfortable. But those skills are fundamental if you're going to be successful with open source.
Absolutely.
And
you're not going to get what you want from me unless I know your needs.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you're not going to get good quality support unless you know how to work with the community too, you know, and so forth. So my point is that that's a skill set that you have to figure out how to create within your organization. And that's what that 10% number should alert people to is, oh, I have to come up with a formal way to put these kinds of things into place with my organization, because it's clearly an important part of what's going on within my company or within my peer set of companies, and the report goes into, you know, kind of all the things that you need to do around that as part of these action plans.
All right. So supposing I'm a CIO or a CTO, I go out, I buy your report right now, which I recommend. It's a great report. Where do I go after that? I mean, does it lay out things that I need to be doing in the next 3 months, 6 months, 9 months? Or is it, these are the trends you need to pay attention to, and where do I go from there?
Well, it's more than trends because, you know, I hate the kinds of things that sort of go, oh, there's a big problem, you should be aware of it. Thanks. Thanks for telling me that.
Now I have something to keep me up.
You know, now I've got another problem. I'm trying to get rid of problems, not... So... The report lays out action plans for each of those three types of organizations, kind of the ad hoc or beginning organization, the mainstream organization, and the advanced one. What are the things that you should do, you know, in terms of building your capability to use open source or to begin to adopt it in a more mainstream manner? You know, what things do you have to put in place to do that? So the report concludes with those that section of, you know, action plans that are really focused on here's the, you know, four or five things that you need to do if you're this kind of an open source using organization.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on, you know, obviously they differ depending on which type of organization you are.
Right. Well, those are all my questions. Bernard, is there anything I didn't ask you that you think our readers and listeners need to know?
Well, one thing you didn't really talk about was the drivers that we identified for why enterprises would adopt open source. And I think those are very interesting. I mean, we touched a little bit about the agility and scale.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's other dimensions, other reasons that enterprises look at open source that are important for what they need to accomplish. You know, like one was quality and security. And, you know, the fact that open source tends to be very responsive around bugs.
One of your case studies, of course, referred to the Coverity software checker, which received a Department of Homeland Security grant to analyze several popular free software projects for quality, responsiveness to bugs, even just the quality of their code.
That's right. That's right. And at least in their conclusion, open source came out quite favorably, particularly in the responsiveness. So they came out with this report that said, here's all these bugs we identified, and some of them were, you know, fairly significant, just as in any software. And the fellow running the study from Coverity was surprised at how quickly all of those bugs were, looked at and addressed and fixed.
What wasn't the period? Something like 2 weeks? Within 2 weeks, we had solved 80% of these bugs.
Yeah, it was quite dramatic and quite remarkable. In contrast with a typical kind of proprietary product approach to these kinds of things. So,
right.
You know, quality and security is another reason why enterprises look at adopting open source. Cost, we talked about, and there's a lot of dimensions of cost. There's the pure license fee issue, you know, over the life of a project that could be very significant, but there's also the question of the timing of when you make payments, which
mm-hmm.
we talked a little bit about in terms of, you know, you don't have to pay up front to begin using the software. You can use it and make more investment as you get more value out of it.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's another one. Of course, sovereignty is a huge issue throughout the world, which is essentially governments and companies in, we'll call them non-American nations, non-U.S. nations, I should say,
mm-hmm.
don't want to have their technology future dictated by companies from the United States.
The perpetual fear about the NSA backdoor in Windows, for example.
Well, that's for sure. One, you know, the question of, you know, is my stuff going to be secure or is somebody coming in and eavesdropping? Which if you're a country with, you know, your own secrecy needs, the thought that the U.S. might be, you know, kind of sending in a packet and all of a sudden reading all your private information is very concerning. Beyond the pure sort of national security issues, there's questions of or issues that many countries want to develop their own IT capabilities in their economies because they see that as a fundamental foundational skill for all the other kinds of things that they'll be wanting to do. And, you know, sort of purchasing packaged software that it kind of comes in a bundle that you can't do much with, from their perspective, retards the ability for them to develop a native IT capability. And so they like open source because it gives them more flexibility. They can modify it. They can have their own people begin working on the code. And so it gives them the ability to sort of build up their own internal capabilities. So that's another driver for enterprises. Innovation is a big one. There's a couple of good case studies in the report talking about companies that have leveraged open source and open source community to pursue further their own particular business interests. So this isn't kind of innovation writ large for the economy or for the society. It's innovation for that particular company. It's a way of them extending their business strategy, but leveraging open source as a way to accomplish that. You know, that's another driver for enterprises. So there's a number of drivers that were identified in the report as why open source is important to enterprises and why enterprises are taking advantage of it. And those are all things that if you are a CIO or a CTO, you should be looking at and saying, well, is that characteristic important to me? I mean, or is that driver important to me? And so, you know, and if it is, what are the things I need to do? And we actually do a mapping of open source characteristics. So there's a number of characteristics of open source, things like expansive licensing or, you know, high quality or community, whatever it might be. And we sort of do a mapping between the drivers that I've just been discussing and those characteristics so you can really look at what capabilities do I need to build in my organization, what things are going to be important to me about open source.
Right.
And then you can look at the products you use to ensure that they're strong in those areas of those characteristics so that they'll support the drivers that you want to be pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an area of the report that we didn't get a chance to talk about earlier that is, you know, a key part of it. Because at the end of the day, you know, open source may be a great thing on its own, but it's, you know, really has to be seen in the context of what are the things that I'm trying to accomplish as an organization? What are my business objectives, writ small and large? And does open source, you know, support me in pursuing those things? If it doesn't, then it's kind of like, well, you know, okay, great. It's a great thing. But if it does, then it's something that really needs to be examined very closely.